Welcome to Talking Insights and to another episode of Polling Around the World. My name is Antonio, I'm your host, and today we're diving into the polling in the Middle East and Africa. These two diverse regions where political, cultural, and societal factors play a significant role in shaping public opinion research. To guide us through these insights, we're joined by two incredible guests. Firstly, we have Zaya Boumé, the founder of Responsible Growth Consulting, where she helps brands navigate complex cultural and economic landscapes, and John Pershuti, a veteran in the field of market research and insights. John is the founder and CEO of MarketEye, specializing in research across Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. And if this was not enough, they're also the representatives of SMR in the GCC region. Thank you very much both for being here and for accepting the invitation for being here. I really want to learn so much about the whole region with you, and I feel like you're the perfect persons to ask some questions.
Thank you, Antonio, for this invitation.
I wanted to start to talk about a more political side and like how the political landscape on both Middle East and Africa kind of impacts the way that polling is conducted in those regions.
Well, here, let me answer that point. So, as you know, politically, the region's sensitive, particularly now, as you can see what's going on in the region, particularly the issues of Gaza, and now with the, you know, what's going on recently with the ceasefire agreement, and maybe some of the rhetoric that's coming out of the United States is kind of inflaming the region, and there's an inherent, I would say, in the air, it's kind of instability in a way in terms of a lot of uncertainty that's created. So that does have an impact on the whole concept of polling. But in general, polling, particularly anything that has to do with political polling or attitudes towards the government, government trust, or anything that's related to the socioeconomics of the region, has always been handled very, very, very carefully. So you can imagine that we live in this region is described by, in the GCC, for example, they're monarchies, and there's different types of monarchies. You've got an absolute monarchy in Saudi Arabia. You also have what's called a federal monarchy in the UAE. You've got a constitutional monarchy in Kuwait, but nonetheless, they are monarchies with a small ruling class. So in the UAE, for example, there's seven emirates. Each emirate has a ruler. It comes together in a federation, and the ruler of Abu Dhabi is always the president. The ruler of Dubai is always the vice president. So, and leadership is always transferred from within the family. So it's an inherited monarchy. So as a result of that, when you look at the GCC markets, when it comes to anything that's related to political opinion, I would say it's carefully controlled because the central government are very concerned about unity, and they're very concerned about stability and about being very careful about how the status quo might be examined. So when you contrast that to the West, for example, where political polling can take on the form of just about any topic from government trust to trust in the individual to criticism of the individual, that doesn't exist in our region. So typically what happens in the area of political polling, there's a lot of regulation around how an organization can actually implement a political poll. And the safest way to do it, of course, is to work with key ministries that are involved with the review of information that's disseminated within the information space. So this would be the Ministry of Statistics, this could be the Ministry of Information. What that means then is that sometimes there is a longer process of implementing a political poll to get something approved because the questions have to be carefully looked at. But then also how the questions are asked also have to be very carefully reviewed. And there's also cultural reasons why you want to look at that as well. That's kind of the best way that happens. So what you tend to see in the end of any type of polling that gets disseminated publicly, that's not to say you can't have a private a privately funded political poll that flies under the radar, where the information is captured and used in very private and secure settings. However, anything that might wind up in the public view, such as like a Pew political poll in the United States or Gallup, you have to be very, very careful, because then what happens is the polls that actually tend to make it out into the public space, I would say, align with national priorities. And so that means that it becomes a discussion between the relevant authorities in terms of what topics can be assessed. And then oftentimes there's a review of information before it gets disseminated. And the local governments within each one of the countries have to be given the final permission on whether something can be disseminated or not. And that's the best way to do it. It has to be a collaborative endeavor to actually have a successful political public opinion poll. And I've been involved with a number of these. And the ones that work well are the ones where there's a great deal of collaboration, because then there are no surprises and one can review and ensure that the data is interpreted correctly. That's kind of the GCC. Go ahead. So before I could ramble on for hours, because then the story changes and there are other dimensions when you look at Africa, for example, and that really depends whether you're looking at North Africa. I do a lot of work in West Africa, for example, the Sahel. That completely changes as well in terms of how you actually interact with the public and actually conduct a poll. You've got a whole different set of issues.
No, but that's an actually a very interesting topic, because I think generally we kind of put these two regions kind of together, or we did for this time, we did put them together. But in fact, even Africa, it's so different between like north, south, east, and west, and west, and the center and everything. Like, I feel like we sometimes put these kind of labels and we say just Africa in general. Yeah. There's so much more going on, and the way that you do pollings in Africa North versus South Africa versus, I don't know, Congo and Senegal and everything, it should be so much different, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you look at North Africa, again, you could take a country like Morocco, which is it's a monarchy. But then if you look at Tunisia, it's pretty much a democratic republic. So, and there's a lot more flexibility in terms of polling. Now, if you go to Egypt, which, is technically a presidential republic, the president has centralized much of the power, and there's careful control of information that's disseminated. So it begins to look more like a monarchy. So if you're going to do public opinion polling in Egypt, again, you have to work through the appropriate authorities to make sure that the questions are acceptable. And this is just on the side of being the vendor or the supplier or the research organization that's going to go out and do interviews. Now, when you go into Africa, let's say you go into West Africa or Sub-Saharan Africa, you've got, not only do you have issues related to what is permissible by government authorities in terms of Ministry of Information and Ministry of Statistics, you have educational issues. So, for example, in the West, we're using digital means for most of our data collection. Even in the GCC, everything has gone digital. But when you're in West Africa, for example, if you're in, I do a lot of work in Niger, for example, you've got a large amount of illiteracy. You can't even rely on self-completion interviews that are online or on a mobile phone because, first of all, they're illiterate. I mean, they have basic literacy, let's say, so they would not feel comfortable in a self-completion survey. Secondly, you have language issues. So you could take a West African country where you'll look at the official language is listed as French, but in reality, that's only a minority to actually speak French. And then you have to look at a variety of other languages, Hausa, Tawadik, Tamashek, it goes on and on and on. And some of these languages don't even make it easy to put into a survey. Because they may be more of a spoken language as opposed to a written language. So you have to rely on hybrid mechanisms of having a trained pool of face-to-face interviewers that can. And again, this is kind of a no-no in the world of research, in the sense that they have to be able to translate on the fly into different languages and paraphrase sometimes. And again, that becomes a challenge, because the last thing that we want is interviewer bias being interjected into a survey. But sometimes this is what we've got to do. In some of the countries, for example, if you're in the Sahel, you've got security concerns. So outside of Niamey, for example, you need to provide security to move interviewers about, because there's a high degree of violent extremist terrorist organizations. And so you want to get, for example, if you're in Niger, you want to do survey polling in Agadez. Well, it's an interesting area, and people would love to speak to you, but it's not easy to get there. And then even within those areas, you've got tribal concerns where you have to actually get agreement from tribal elders before your interviewing team can actually go in and begin to ask about things such as how's life or government trust or the belief in the current situation. So Africa is a whole different ballgame altogether. And so again, with Africa, it's always good to work with a strong set of local partners that are there that know the nuances within each one of the, you know, with each one of the countries, because they can all be very different. And I finally have one more point that I always think is a very interesting thing is let's assume you've jumped through all the hoops and you can run a survey. You have to remember that most of these societies are what you would classify as collectivist societies. They're not very accustomed to expressing an individual opinion, because if the opinion varies from the collective, they're uncomfortable. So you tend to have to find creative means to get a individual perspective, because typically the answer might come out as what they believe reflects the opinion of the collective society, which could be the community, could be the tribe, it could be the region. And you have this within the GCC countries. It's very difficult to move beyond a collectivist opinion. So you have to bear that in mind when you're looking at public opinion polling once you've successfully run one. And typically what I end up doing is I'm looking for the nuanced chain if you run tracking. So if I run a study today and I run the study in 6 months or 1 year, I'm looking for the change, whether it's positive or negative, to actually understand the trend. Because you might actually just get a collectivist view, which looks like everything is perfect, but really it's the difference in that position that you want to look for.
It's really interesting to see like the differences and the things that you were mentioning, like the ways that religion and the tribal affiliations, and it's not only about the governments. There's so much more, like I can imagine the whole geographic region, like the whole way, you know, if a tribe is in the middle of a mountain and you cannot reach there. Like, I mean, that's something that you need to take care in when thinking about polling, and especially in Africa. But even in Middle East, like if it's in the middle of, I don't know, kilometers and kilometers and miles and miles and miles away, and you cannot reach them, like, I mean, they should have a voice, but at the same time, it's so far away that sometimes I can imagine that you have like to take the least painful route and like
Absolutely. Maybe. So, yeah. You know, and you take a look at Saudi Arabia, for example. You know, a lot of the polling that we tend to do is in urban centers, right? So, you know, we'll do Jeddah, the Jeddah urban region, or Riyadh, or Dammam. But there's a whole, you know, there's a whole rural Saudi Arabia that sometimes can get excluded. Even when we're doing traditional marketing research, where, you know, we're working with our big, you know, commercial clients, our Fortune 500 clients, again, we tend to focus on the urban areas. But things change when you move away from the urban centers. So all this needs to be taken into consideration when you're designing anything that's going to look at how people feel about the political situation, or how they feel about government services, or how they feel about anything that has to do with, you know, the social side of things, you know, society in general. And so all of that needs to be taken into consideration. Again, you're looking in the analysis, I always say, the real insight is in the nuanced differences, not necessarily in the hard polling numbers that come out.
Yeah. And how can you engage with people? Because you were mentioning this kind of public distrust with the polls and the way to engage, because I feel in some regions, people are not taught or are incentivized to have a kind of a voice and an opinion of themselves. But how can you gain that trust and get them to, like, you can say that, even though that's in some cases there's a lot of hoops that you have to go through, but is that a way to create that trust?
Well, you know, I think we've got to, well, let me approach it from because things have changed in the way polling is done. For example, in the GCC, before COVID, the majority of the polling was done in face-to-face settings. And we had to really, you had to rely on having a great relationship with your face-to-face fieldwork providers, because those individuals know how to create rapport and build trust in a group setting. So, for example, in the old days, let's say if you go back to the States of the 50s, you know, somebody would knock on your door and ask to participate in a survey. In the Middle East, up to about COVID, you never really knocked on somebody's door. You ended up using a snowballing technique, and you would have a deep pool of what I call recruiters, and they were snowball, and they'd use their local network. They'd live in the neighborhoods and the communities. They've built up networks, and you would get these referrals. Because it's a society that works, it works closely on a referral basis. And so that worked. And so if you had all of the necessary approvals to go in with a political poll, you would get cooperation. Now, mind you, again, getting people to move off of a collectivist position into an individualist position, that's not easily overcome. So you're always still going to have to rely on a combination of looking at the nuanced change and also looking at other hybrid methodologies such as qualitative research, where you can really work with them and get them comfortable. So you can use other techniques to get them to share something about their what I call their inner world that they don't often share. Fast forward to today, where everything is moved online and very little is done face to face. And Zahia, I don't know, in the experience that you've had, how much face to face interviewing you've been working with. I haven't worked with any personally in the GCC now in probably the last 3 years. It just stopped as a result of COVID. So what I've seen is that data is much noisier than what we used to have. So you used to have a lot of data that doesn't speak. Let's just say you don't see the distributions that you'd like to see when you're using statistics and you're looking for normal distributions around an opinion. So you end up having to really use other means to, and this is where we rely on the advanced analytics to try to squeeze other information out of data as opposed to just the sheer opinion. But it's a tough one. I think that's the biggest challenge today. As we've moved just about everything online and rely on access panels and we rely on programmatic sampling, it's very difficult. I think we're in a period of time where it's a challenge. It's a challenge for two reasons. You don't really have the ability to authenticate your respondent. And secondly, there's nobody there to coach them, to mentor them, to give them reassurance that they can express their opinion. So it's a challenging period of time. And I think Zahia probably faces that in all the work that you've been facing as well.
Indeed, to build up on what John was saying, I moved to Dubai 2 years ago and I was blessed to mix a lot with population because this is something that I'm passionate about, meeting people. We analyze people behind the computer, analyzing data and everything, but I'm also passionate in putting myself out there and meeting people. And actually, in order for you to feel the market here and to understand better what John said earlier, is that Middle East overall, and especially UAE and Saudi, because this is the market that I'm focused into, they are very young market. We had like some few data to share about it. So you have to imagine and be aware that we are in a region where the median age in UAE is like around 31.6 years old, and in Saudi Arabia, like around 29.6 years old. So it's a very young population compared to Western country. Like, for you to understand, like, for example, in US, the median age is 38 years old.
Yeah.
So it's a very young population and they are incredibly connected. For example, when I was in France, I had like an Instagram account. I was not using it. Now I'm very active. Why? Because there is a very high penetration rate of digital. Like, I will share with you a few data. UAE has a penetration rate of social media of 112.5% and Saudi Arabia 94.3%. which is above the global average, that is about around 62.3%. Myself, since I am in Dubai, I'm very active in my social media. Why? Because everything is there. John was talking about referral. Yes, here it's all about the referral, whether to choose a brand, to choose people, to choose place. It's all about the referral. So it's all the content are in the social media, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat. And the time spent on the social media apparently is higher than in another country. Like here, it's a daily an average of 3 hours compared to the global average, which that is closer to a little more than 2 hours. So that underscores like the deep integration into the digital world. So young population, highly connected. And in the meantime, what I have observed is that by mixing also myself with the population and also analyzing data for different clients, is that it's all about behavior if we want to get the real impact. So that's why there is a kind of limit with the traditional market research methodology based on declarative, because in order to really understand the insight, it's like really to analyze the behavior in order to understand the consumer preferences, the dynamic of the market. We have all this data that we have through social media.
Yeah. And speaking of social media, I was going to ask about technology and the way that technology is improving. And speaking about like the younger generations and especially in those countries where the generation is so young and they use social media in a completely different way that some parts of the world use it, are more engaged. Now I was going to ask about like the counterpoint of it, of like, especially in the US, we talk about like the bots and the fake bots and the fake personas online and all that. How does that, and if it influences, but how does that influence that whole structure there? The fake personas, the bots, the, I don't want to call it the fake news and the fake media, but you know, like the fake personas on the internet, does that affect, especially in the Middle East?
Well, let me try to answer that one. I think the rise of misinformation, disinformation is here as well. And one can never pinpoint to what extent it's out there, whether or not there are bots. But one can say that wherever there is, let's just say malign intention, they exist. And I think the governments within the region are very concerned about controlling for misinformation and disinformation. And you can imagine why. You know, it wasn't so long ago that we had the Arab Springs, and that created a lot of concern within the region. So you've got a security infrastructure within the GCC countries for sure, North African countries for sure, where they are concerned and they're looking out for that. So they are there. I mean, it's certainly there. Now, from the point of view of the general public, I'm not so sure they are as sensitive to the topic because, you know, the U.S. just went through this election cycle where really the underlying theme to just about everything that was in the information space was fake news, misinformation, deep fakes, et cetera. And effectively, the intent of it all underscoring the U.S. elections was to create this air of uncertainty, you know, so that nobody would know what to believe. And that's really the crux of the work in that area. For the last 5 years, I've been involved in the measurement of vulnerability to misinformation, disinformation, not in the Middle East, but in Central and Eastern Europe. And I understand that it's when you look at the strategic intent of malign players, of malign influence, really, a lot of it is just about creating disruption. It's about creating chaos, creating enough disinformation and uncertainty about news so that nobody can really understand what's real and what isn't real. So it's a concern here. But I think from the general public yet, you know, when I'm out talking to people, I don't hear that creep into conversation so much. I think the general population is not so worked up about it. But I know that the government certainly are with certain clear justification of why they should be.
Yeah. However, Something that is very interesting to understand in the region is the impact of the war. In the Arab world, let's give some element of context to the audience. So the Arab world is like kind of quite the side of the US, and you have like a four key region. You have like the GCC, where you have Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, that contains includes Dubai or Abu Dhabi. You have the Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Bahrain, Iraq. You have the Levant, that includes states like Lebanon, Syria, Palestine. You have what we call North Africa, Maghreb, with Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and we have Egypt. And 40% of the population is affected by conflict and by war. And not only it limits the market accessibility, so we have only 60% of this population that who are living in a stable condition, where business is thriving. So, but it's very important for the audience to understand that the war is something to have in mind, and that in fact, And then John will help me on this matter because he used to deal with this topic. The war, let's say, is very important for the younger generation, because we observe on the global level that the younger generation, the Gen Z, especially, and the other upcoming generation are very sensitive to brands to be responsible, to act as a force for good. So can you imagine the same like upcoming generation coming either from different country of where war is happening, unfortunately, or not, but it's more than ever impacting the generation, the different generation here, and is helping. It's also very important for the brands to understand that are the trends to be responsible. And maybe John, I will ask you maybe to your thought on this topic. Well, that is very important to have in mind to understand the market.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So what's happened recently in Gaza, you know, when after October 7th and then the IDF response, it created a backlash against the Western companies. And you may or may not, in the media doesn't cover it very much, but that Gen Z that Zahia was referring to, because they're very connected and they're very digitally informed, there were apps that were being disseminated across the region, that all you'd have to do is you point your phone, your camera to a brand and you click on it and the app would just say, boycott, don't boycott. And so as a result of that, some of the, you can imagine which, you know, brands that that could be affected. Some of the biggest Western brands in the region saw tremendous impact on the decrease in sales. In places like Egypt, some of the, you know, there were American brand food and beverage outlets that were being set on fire. It was incredible. And what happened was through digital technology, it just spread quickly across the region. So I could be in a rural area in Oman and you would hear about teens pointing their phone at a logo and clicking on this app and says boycott, and immediately they would boycott it. And this there are cases like this across each one of the countries within the Middle East. And I even saw type of impact again because of social media and influencers reaching countries like South Africa in terms of boycotting Western brands. And so it's this generation, because they are, how would you put it, to Zahi's point, they're demanding good corporate behavior. And they're connected and they speak. And so you see it. So yeah, to Zahi's point, it's a very powerful generation, very powerful. They're connected and they are not afraid to use it. So again, tying that back to public opinion polling, you can imagine how one has to be very careful as a public opinion research organization, how to launch public opinion polls because of just the power of digital and social media.
Maybe John, you will help me on this one. You have like this famous sentence: "Vote with your wallet." This vote with your wallet concept more than ever is relevant in the region, because the generation is young, highly educated, with a high spending power. I'm talking about the region that I'm focusing into, like especially UAE. So they vote with the wallet, and to go back to the main topic with market research, that is market research, it helps to understand better the context in order to be able to analyze the data, for example, to understand the context, because it is really something that we can learn when we are in the market. It's not really something that we read.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's fantastic. Honestly, I don't know. I always learn some things new and some things that you're not even thinking about, like the geography of the regions, the way that you spend your money, the way that you can or cannot talk, the way that you use technology. It changes from region to region. And it's so fascinating to understand like how it's done, especially in the Middle East, but also in Africa. And again, I feel like we could talk with this for hours. I could be in here for like 3 hours talking with you guys. I don't want to take you much more time of your day. It's been really, really interesting to know. And I would love to know way more, especially when it comes to more challenges and how the innovation and the future holds for polling. I think that's a very interesting topic. But I just want to say thank you very much for being here, and thank you very much for your kindness and your words and for telling me everything that you just told me. I think it's fantastic and it's incredibly insightful. Thank you. And that wraps our final episode in the Polling Around the World series. Over the past few weeks, we've explored how polling works across different regions, from the history in the US to the evolving methodologies in Asia, Latin America, and finally, we landed in Africa and the Middle East. It's clear that while polling varies across the world, its impact on society, politics, and business, it's undeniable. Thank you very much for all of our guests for sharing their expertise, and to everyone that's in some way or another helped make this series possible. And a quick reminder that if today's discussion sparked some curiosity about the future events, next week, SMR will be in Brussels for the Insight Citizen Summit. I will link everything in the show notes so you can find all the information and the agenda and who's going to be there. It's a fantastic opportunity to see firsthand how research can drive meaningful change. And I want to end with kind of a sneak peek for the next season. In honor of International Women's Day, we'll be celebrating the work of prominent female voices in market research and insights, and we'll sit down with some leaders across the globe and try to understand their stories, their challenges, and successes in shaping the industry. Stay tuned. It's a very interesting lineup we have prepared in March. And until then, thanks for listening, and don't forget to like and subscribe, and follow us for more. See you on the next one. Bye.